Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Control Risks Risk Map podcast, looking into the first 2 weeks of November 2015. In London, I'm Charles Hecker, Control Risks Global Head of Research.
And I'm Michael Moran, New York-based Managing Director for Global Risk Analysis. Welcome to the podcast. As we look into November, a couple of key elections loom. In Argentina, where an unexpectedly tight race has developed to replace Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. And in Turkey, where another domineering leader,
Recep Tayyip Erdogan, has been forced to call new elections because his AK party was unable to form a governing coalition after the last one in June.
But first, we look ahead to the next summit of the Group of 20, G20, convening in Turkey on 15 November. Chuck, the G20 was flying very high after the 2008 financial debacle, which seemed kind of like an inflection point in the transition from the old Western-dominated global economy to one that would rely more on emerging market powers, especially China. I'm tempted to say that the tables have turned a bit. What do you think?
Mike, I'm tempted to agree with you. For those of us who are depending on the emerging markets to drive economic growth in the coming, say, 12 months, I think we're going to be disappointed. China is dramatically slowing in its growth. Russia is already in recession, and the rest of the emerging markets are starting to look a bit tarnished, perhaps with the exception of India. What's interesting, Mike, though, is that the economic pendulum does indeed seem to be swinging back to traditional developed markets. And this high engine of growth globally that we had, driving demand for commodities, for energy, for minerals, and for raw materials, has really started to stutter. What would you say?
I was at a mergers and acquisitions conference this week in New York, and the talk was of a complete reversal of capital flows. In other words, money that was being spent in the emerging markets in a search for yield or profit has really reversed completely. It's no longer just a search for a safe place to put it, which was the story behind the enormous investments made in the U.S. Treasury bonds and before the euro crisis in Europe's bonds as well. But now it's much more brick and mortar investment in mergers and acquisitions. The Chinese, for instance, set a record in the first half of this year in terms of its flow of investments into North America. Now, that's not putting them in the top five of investments into North America, but they're a growing presence in the investment and landscape here. Similar trends are being seen in Europe. Europe is looking more like a bargain to global investors, and you're seeing money from the United States, from some big emerging markets regions, especially MENA and Asia, flowing into Europe. In some countries in Europe, for instance, in Italy, there have been some pretty significant reforms that are making companies in that country look a lot more attractive to outside investment. So we are seeing a real change, and that's certainly going to change the conversation at the G20 meeting.
Mike, we'll watch that very carefully, and I assume that we'll probably come back to it in a future podcast. Let's turn now to Turkey, where Prime Minister Erdogan has run into some unexpectedly efficient opposition to his once complete dominance of Turkey's political scene. Renewed conflict with the Kurdish PKK, the raging civil war in Syria on Turkey's southern borders, and the country's rather fraught position in global debt markets all play into this. David Lee is Control Risk's senior analyst for Europe, and I asked him about the snap elections due on Sunday, the 1st of November.
Dave, Recep Tayyip Erdogan's AK party failed to form a government and win a majority in polling in June. What do you think the likelihood is that the AK party will finally pull ahead and form a government in parliament?
The surprising thing, given everything that's happened in between the June elections and these ones, including security incidents such as the bombing in Ankara a couple of weeks ago, and some pretty intense poll taking over the course of the intervening 5 months, is that the polls haven't really changed that much at all. And it looks as if the result is going to be fairly similar to the one we saw in June. That means that the AKP is probably not going to get majority again, but that more than anything else depends on whether the HDP, the Kurdish Majority Party, can get past the 10% threshold again for representation in parliament. The polls suggest that it will, and that will mean a hung parliament and more coalition negotiations.
Dave, what's the opportunity for opposition parties to pool together and run a minority government?
I think that's pretty slim. I think if that were possible, it probably would have happened last time. The opposition's really diverse. You've got the pretty right-wing MHP, you've got the Republican Party, traditionally the main opposition, and you've got the HDP. Between them, they've got fairly little in common, really, and I don't see that they're going to be able to come together as a uniting force with the aim of toppling the AKP.
Dave, what's the outlook for business amidst all of this political instability? What should the business community be keeping foremost on its mind?
I think business is looking primarily at the economy, which has been the main driver of the AKP's success since it first came to power 12, 13 years ago. Now, there's a lot of concern in Turkey that if the US Fed raises interest rates, that the way Turkey's financial system is structured, that's going to be really impactful on Turkey. And obviously, you've seen its currency struggle a bit in the course of the last year. So there are potential trouble spots ahead on the economy. In terms of the actual political impact on business, I think the environment's going to remain pretty stable, really. We're probably going to get a coalition between the AKP and the Republican Party, which will be stable enough and will enable the attitudes to business that have prevailed over the last few years to continue.
David Lee, thanks very much.
Well, things aren't going to script in Argentina either. Most analysts, though not our own, have characterized the election to succeed the populist presidency of Cristina Fernandez as more of a coronation of her party's candidate, Mauricio Scioli, than an actual vote. But her right-of-center challenger, Buenos Aires Mayor Mario Macri, is running even in the polls ahead of the 22 November vote. I asked our director of political risk for the Americas, Simon Whistler, what's going on?
Well, I think there's a couple of factors at play. First of all, you've got to consider from the primary elections that were held in August, in which most people were basing their initial results or forecasts for the first round of the elections, I think up to an extra 2 million voters took part in the general elections. And most, if not all of those, went for either Macri or Massa, i.e. they didn't go for Scioli, the leading candidate. And so that's made up a huge difference, essentially made the difference between Scioli and Macri. The second thing to consider is that this is essentially a referendum on Cristina Kirchner's government. It's not so much about Scioli coming into power. It's about kind of, do people want more of the same with Cristina Kirchner putting the strings behind the scene? And ultimately, you have to see it as a failure on the part of Cristina Kirchner, who's taken a very prominent role in the last few weeks of campaigning, a failure for her more radical left-wing element of the Peronist movement. So there's two key factors there that we need to consider. Going forward, ultimately, it's going to boil down to, I think, where Sergio Massa, the third place candidate, leans. Indications are at the moment that he'll head towards Macri without necessarily giving him a full endorsement. Their policy programs, their agendas are much more similar than between Massa and Scioli. But Massa's got his eye on the long game. I think he doesn't want necessarily make a full endorsement because he still wants to remain powerful within the Peronist party, and it's difficult for him to do that if he gives his full backing to Macri. So there's a few things still in play. Massa's role is going to be critical, but Macri is certainly looking in a much better position than he was just a week ago.
Well, let's play this out a bit. If Macri were to win and a very long period of power for Cristina Fernandez and her husband before her comes to an end, will her supporters and the Peronists actually accept that result? Is there some danger that there might be unrest or significant constitutional controversy?
I think they'll accept the result. I mean, it's a reasonably strong democracy. Obviously, there's a question marks over some of the strength of some of the institutions, but it's a strong democracy. People respect the overall rules of the game. I think it's a question of how much they'll let Macri govern. He's not going to have a majority in Congress. His own alliance sort of running into the election isn't necessarily the most comfortable bedfellows. And then there's his economic program, which is ultimately kind of what he's going to be judged on. And when you talk about removing capital controls, removing potentially devaluing the currency, removing some of the elements of kind of the state support within the economy, which has been the bedrock of what Christina Kirchner has been doing, then that's going to run into a lot of opposition from a large proportion of the population. And so not so much unrest against the actual results, but potential for unrest against what Macri actually tries to do in power.
Thanks, Simon.
Mike, before we wrap up, a few more things on the risk map radar for the coming 2 weeks. On Sunday, the 1st of November, UK Prime Minister David Cameron outlines his government's EU reform demands ahead of the in-out referendum he's pledged to hold next year. On Sunday, the 8th of November, Myanmar holds its first general election amid the risk of conflicts in the transfer of power between the two major parties, one of which is associated with the military establishment. And on Monday, the 9th of November, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu visits the White House at a time of strained relations over the recent Iran nuclear accord.
Before ending this week, I'd be remiss if I did not take a moment to say thanks to our Washington-based producer, Eben Kaplan, who's leaving us this week and who has edited almost all of these podcasts for the past 2 years. Best of luck to you, Eben.
And a big thanks for me too, Eben. That's it for this edition of the Risk Map podcast, produced by Control Risks, the international business risk consultancy. On behalf of my colleague in 36 offices around the world, this is Charles Hecker saying thanks very much for listening and goodbye for now.
And in New York, I'm Michael Moran. Until next time, so long.